When I entered the Foreign Service of the State Department, I had the impression that our embassies and legations were situated only in the great capitals of the world. It never occurred to me that Americans represented the United States in so many far-flung outposts. Places that are infinitesimal pinpoints on a large world map, but important and strategic islands of home.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Tales of the Foreign Service, a feature in NBC's University of the Air, written and produced in cooperation with the State Department, and dedicated to the personnel of the Foreign Service. The material used in this series is based upon the confidential files of the State Department, much of it never before released to the public. Tonight's program is about the obscure outposts of the Foreign Service. Wherever you find the American flag flying over foreign soil, there is good reason for it. And there you will find, under sometimes appalling circumstances, the American spirit adjusting itself to whatever problems it finds, somehow, miraculously, making a home away from home.
We in the State Department are in constant communication and contact with our embassies in the principal capitals of the world. But for full knowledge of what is happening in the smaller links of our worldwide family chain, where important but unglamorous service is rendered, we must sometimes rely on letters and reports. These are full of strange and often humorous incidents. Americans are somehow the most adjustable people in the world. Perhaps, being made up of all people, they find themselves at home with all people in all lands. Why do we send a bit of the United States to the narrow corners of the world? Why is it necessary to send an American to Nigeria or Greenland or the southernmost town in the universe, Punta Arenas in Chile? In Punta Arenas, a vice consul is needed to take care of the stray travelers and Americans engaged in business.
John's report to tell you a few of a woman's reactions to Chile. We thought we'd come to the end of the world when we took off from the consulate at Santiago and flew here by airplane. The southernmost town in the world and one of the chilliest. No pun intended. John has been so busy learning his new job that we haven't even found a place to live.
The only minute I get to tear away from the office has to be in the middle of a snowstorm, but are you game, Helen?
Of course I'm game. Well, we've got to find a house.
I'll stay.
Hospitality can be carried just so far. We have to find a place of our own.
Remember, we were warned that the housing situation here was impossible.
Where have I heard that before? Oh, to think I'd visualize a Spanish cabana with patio and potted palms. I suggest we build an igloo.
Well, this is only for part of the year, Helen, but I might as well tell you that there's no hop season in Chile. Oh, by the way, where did that hop food ever get its name? What a joke.
Ooh, let's get this cab. We can't walk against this wind.
Okay. Hey, taxi.
Where did all these taxis come from? Oh,
that's one thing the town has plenty of.
Do you speak English?
Yes, senor. Well, we're going house hunting. That is a joke, I think.
What's so funny?
You American, no?
Yes, I'm the new vice consul.
I know just where you go. I take care of everything.
But this is a hotel.
See? Hotel Cosmos.
best hotel in town. $120 per month.
But I don't want to live in a hotel.
Surely there must be some apartment house.
All full, senor. All year round. Everything taken. You want hot water, clean sheets, place to live. You live here. This hotel, American flat.
Then, obviously, since we're American.
Si, senora. American plan for America.
Well, all I hope is that they don't kick us out after 5 days, just like Americans.
Living conditions in these outposts are sometimes disappointing, but they are comparable to housing conditions today in the United States. Helen and John found life in Punta Arenas friendly and intimate. There was golf, tennis, skiing, skating, and strangely enough, a first-class racetrack. Then, too, occasionally, they could make a trip to Buenos Aires. Living in Punta Arenas, Chile, was like living in a suburb of the world. Shipping in these outposts is an amazing and interesting business. For sharp contrast to Chile, let us examine a post report from the American Consulate General Office at Lagos, Nigeria, where the Vice Consul and his wife have an apartment. But when they stock it with provisions...
I had to laugh at my wife in the native market. It's very hot here in Lagos, and there's a strong, gamey smell in the streets which are bustling with the business of this West African town. The markets are open air under a humid sun, but they're ablaze with the colors of tropical fruit in vivid and exotic contrast to the skin and costumes of the natives.
Bob, you'd better translate for me. I think I want to buy everything in the place.
Well, now go easy now, Julia. Remember all that canned goods we've got stored away that you insisted on sending over from the States.
But these are fresh vegetables, cucumbers, tomatoes, corn, and eggplant and okra.
Those onions and potatoes look good.
Let's get a pound of everything.
How about sampling the native fruits, Julia? Ever taste a mango?
I've heard of them. Don't we have them in California?
Mm-hmm. Here, let me show you. I'll cut it open with my pocket knife. Here. Here, taste this. Watch out for the juice. It'll gush all over you.
Mmm.
Like it?
What's it like? Peach, pineapple, plum?
All three rolled into one.
I'm taking a bath in it, but I love it.
How about some avocado?
And bananas. They're hard to get in the States.
We can make a swell fruit salad. We'll get some of the pineapples and oranges, too.
And aren't those papayas? It makes wonderful juice for breakfast. Vitamin A or something.
We don't need vitamins with this, son.
Oh, tell him to wrap up the whole market. What's Nigerian for the work?
Life in Lagos, Nigeria is again an intimate affair for Americans. The American and British colony is small, and their problems are shared cheerfully and amusingly. It's hot all year round, except for the rainy season, so sometimes work is done in the cool of the evening. There are plenty of opportunities in Lagos for dancing, boating, tennis, and horseback riding. One can have such luxuries tax-free in these outposts. But lucky are those in Chile or Nigeria in comparison with the consul stationed in a remote Chinese settlement called Dihua. Dihua is the capital of Kingstown Province, which is nearly three times as big as Texas and 10 times as sandy. Bordered by Russia, India, Outer Mongolia, and the rest of China, there's a cold desert region of 4 million population, mostly refugees from somewhere else.
What possessed me to leave Dihua to take a short leave in Chongqing? I should have stayed in bed. I found out the bus trip took at least a month, so I took a plane, but it only took 2 days. Incidentally, it's as far from Dihua to Chongqing, the wartime capital of China, as it is from Washington, D.C. to Amarillo, Texas. There was only one other passenger aboard, an army officer on his way to Chongqing to be discharged. I certainly don't envy you being stationed here in Dihua.
I've grown some army outposts in my life, but this takes the cake for isolation.
Oh, it's pretty exciting, Lieutenant. At first, I thought I'd die of boredom. But every now and then, we have a first-class massacre in the neighborhood. Sort of, puts on your toes.
Massacre of whom?
Well, nobody knows who fights who around these parts. Mongols and Tartars, Kazakhs, and Uzbeks. They just naturally like to fight. And woe to him who gets in the way.
Listen, you suppose the pilot's okay? That sounds like trouble in his right engine.
This is the first time I've made this one.
I've flown the hump from India to China, but this is worse. Well, everything's okay now. Must have been iced up for a moment, sir.
Hey, it's cool in here. I brought along an extra blanket. Would you like it?
Oh, thanks. Well, may be cold in here, but take a look down there.
Yeah, it wouldn't be any fun to parachute down there.
Doesn't look like anybody's lived in these parts for a million years.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll be glad to see a little civilization for a few days. I'll tell you something funny.
Yeah?
The main trouble with living in Diwa is the mail. You know how a guy stationed away from home looks for that.
Oh, yes, I do.
Sometimes mail for the state stays in Diwa for 3 months before we can get it out. So far as mail from the state goes... Yes. I got a letter from home written a year ago, just before I left.
That shows us, isn't it?
Yeah, and that isn't all. My draft registration number for the war recently ended caught up with me a month ago.
My world. But not a Diwa, eh?
Outpost in Diwa is as isolated as any in the Foreign Service, but it's necessary. To take care of American citizens whose affairs have brought them to this lonely section of the world. Our vice consul there, of necessity, does not have his family accompany him. In fact, one of the sacrifices our men in the Foreign Service often make is having to leave their families at home, since many of these outposts have little or no facilities for educating or taking care of children. There is, however, one obscure post which encourages the bringing of wives. Our American consulate at Accra on the Gold Coast of Africa. Here is a note written especially as a memo for women going to Accra.
It has been suggested that a woman's viewpoint may be of some benefit to the women accompanying their husbands on their first tour to Accra or to other West African stations. My ideas and suggestions are personal and may be worthless to others, but here goes. These are gleaned from the company wives of American oil men in the vicinity.
Bring dresses you can wash. There are no dry cleaners. If you indulge in tennis, golf, swimming, well, beaching is a better word, bring the necessary clothes. I say beaching because the surf is very rough and treacherous.
Bring evening shoes for formal occasions. Some women wear mosquito boots, but I wouldn't be caught boarding them. However, bring a good insect repellent. Mosquitoes are fierce.
Stop for lots of lipsticks and other cosmetics. The funny thing is, you'd better bring as many different shades of cosmetics as you can. If you take Ativan to protect you from malaria, you'll find your skin changes color. If you have long hair, heaven help you. There are no beauty shops, no good soap. There's a European barber in town who cuts my husband's hair very well, but I'd hate to find out what he'd do to mine.
You'll need canned butter and canned milk. Of course, if you want fresh milk, bring a cow along.
World War Number Two was the occasion for the beginning of many new minor consulates. For example, our representation at Gottorp, Greenland. As a result of the interruption of communications between Denmark and Greenland during April 1940, American consular representation in Greenland was deemed advisable. Gottorp is located on the tip of a narrow peninsula and separated from the open sea by a few small islands. The settlement is on the shore of a large fjord, which, with its tributaries, interlaces the territory between Gottorp and the Great Ice Cap. surrounding country is very mountainous and extremely rocky. But because of its geographical situation, the severity of the Arctic winters is tempered. Health conditions in Gortop are perhaps better than in any other Foreign Service outpost. However pleasant the conditions may be, the principal officer in Greenland often finds himself with duties other than counselor in Europe.
Wait a minute, Mr. Oakley. I'll help you with that, too, Rob.
Thank you, Edward. There. Well, we've got it open. Did you have any luck yet, Park?
No luck. Nobody in Greenland wants to be a janitor.
I didn't know that I was mechanically inclined. I can pump fuel oil, fill oil stoves, fix the electric plant, do odd plumbing jobs. How about a job for me, Edward? I'm getting to be quite a handyman.
With the absence of professional handymen in Greenland, a principal officer in the Foreign Service in that region does well to have a knowledge of these things. As to his creature comforts, only the basic foods are to be found in Greenland, so he must import much from the United States. The raising of vegetables, for example, is a hobby rather than a source of food, but fish are plentiful except in winter. There are no markets in Gotop. Instead, a man must shop among his friends.
Hello, this is John Oakenstreet.
Mr. Oakenstreet, this is your neighbor, Jan Alving.
Oh, yes. What luck, Jan?
I've got a shoulder of reindeer meat I can let you have.
Oh, fine.
Also, I scoured the neighborhood and I found you some duck that your old Peter shot day before yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And if you care to try it, I can find you some seal meat.
Never tried seal meat. Is it good?
Well, it's pretty fishy. I suggest you buy the liver instead. It's excellent.
I'm very grateful to you, Jan.
Not at all. When the hunting season really begins, we'll see that you're well stocked.
Supplies, then, are a communal affair, shared by good friends. In return, the principal officer shares his importation of foodstuffs from New York. Our representative in Greenland finds some interesting ways of preserving food from one season to the next. For example, Gotop's climate is ideal for the keeping of fresh fruits and vegetables for several months. Eggs packed in salt or water glass retain their freshness indefinitely. The climate, however, poses special clothing problems. Garb similar to that worn by aviators in high altitude is prescribed. And warmth rather than style should be the motto. For entertainment.
Ever ski before, Mr. Oakley?
Yes, a little in New Hampshire, Edward.
I was there once. Greenland is not like New Hampshire.
Well, the landscape looks ideal.
That slope over there is 10 miles from here. Wait till we reach the top, you'll miss the ski toes. You'll find that one run down the mountain is enough for the day once we get there.
Skiing is the principal entertainment. The foreign colony consists of a Canadian consul and vice consul, an Icelandic shepherd, an Icelandic motorboat inspector, and the two officers assigned to the American consulate. There are about 50 Danes in the town. The visit of a United States Coast Guard cutter to Gotop is comparable in excitement to the landing of a large steamer in Hawaii, only more so. Little islands of home, our obscure outposts, are islands indeed when set into a sea of completely foreign tongues and customs. Especially is this true in Jeddah, in Saudi Arabia. Jeddah is a town of 20,000 on the Persian Gulf, a port of Mecca, through which pass in a good year as many as 100,000 Muslim pilgrims. Jeddah has two seasons, a hot season and a hotter season. It is the only diplomatic post where a minister cannot use English or French anywhere in his business. However, if he is fortunate enough to know Arabic, he has the mayor's key to the city. The diplomatic and consular corps, totaling 50 souls, are isolated from the Arabs and wholly dependent upon their own resources, because there is no public entertainment of any kind. As one vice consul put it, this isolation and dependency upon themselves causes them to realize that to know 50 people well is a richer experience than to live alone among 5 million.
My name is W.A. Eddy, assigned to the legation at Jeddah. I was delighted to find that I could bring my wife and 12-year-old daughter Carmen to this post. Ladies, even the 12-year-old variety, are a rare sight here. There are 8 eligible women for dancing. I remember one occasion when our daughter Carmen created quite a disturbance. Unintentionally, of course.
The king will receive you now, Mr. Eddy.
Oh, thank you. Come, Carmen. Are you excited?
Oh, yes. But, Daddy, why is everybody looking at me? Have I spilled something on my dress?
It's just your imagination, Carmen.
Dear, I think it's because we're not veiled.
Oh, did I do something wrong, Daddy? Did I lose my scarf?
No, dear, no. We're Americans. It's all right.
Allah! Allah!
It certainly upset the guards. They're praying. They've never seen anything like us before. Must be a little like a mid-Victorian catching his first sight of an ankle.
The ladies of our colony are the envy of their secluded Arabian lady friends and are the new and revolutionary yeast of Arabia. Their freedom is respected, even though imitation's not yet permitted.
I think you should say something about what happens when we get outside our colony.
Right.
Our immunity to native custom extends only to the diplomatic colony and the environs of Jeddah. When we travel inland, we wear Arabian dress and observe Arabian ways.
Yes, and speaking of communications in these outposts, it's interesting to note that up until 1945, the trip from Jeddah to Riyadh, some 800 miles, took 27 days by camel. Nowadays, the king's airplane, manned by an American crew, covers the distance in 3.5 hours. This post, incidentally, was originally built to help accommodate air traffic.
Will you ever forget the day we arrived here, dear? The dust and the garbage in the streets. I remember Carmen came down with a fever.
Oh, yes. This is the clinic, madame.
My child has a fever. Can you treat it?
I am sorry. We do not treat Americans or Europeans here. This is only for the natives of Jeddah and pilgrims going to Mecca.
Then what are we to do?
At a loss. There are doctors in town who can set a broken arm, but if there is any other trouble, you may have to go to Cairo or Port Sudan.
Fortunately, Carmen's fever wore off, being due, I believe, mostly to excitement of a new place. However, there was one serious case in the colony that we knew about. The California Arabian Standard Oil Company had a doctor 1,000 miles away on the Persian Gulf. When a woman we knew was stricken, we had to take some rather amazing steps. Hello? Hello, is this Daran?
This is Daran. This is Daran. Come in, Jeddah.
Is the doctor standing by?
This is the doctor. Can you hear me?
Well, you're coming in pretty well.
What seems to be the trouble?
There's a woman here in Jeddah who has a severe pain in her left side.
Her left side?
Yes. At first, we thought it could be appendicitis.
It should be on the right side, of course. But it may be that her appendix is misplaced. Or that she is getting a sympathetic reaction.
Oh, how can we tell?
Is she nauseated?
Yes.
Is pressure on the area firm to the touch and painful?
Yes.
It sounds serious. I can't very well operate by radio. Can you send her to the hospital here?
Well, I'm sure we can. Thank you, Doctor. She'll be on the next plane. The dangers inherent in this situation are readily apparent. Even under healthful conditions, there's a certain amount of danger in residence in a region without medical facilities. Those dangers are multiplied on a post such as Jitter. We're fortunate that Carmen has been well. There are no dentists in Jitter capable of doing anything but pulling teeth. A roving dentist who visits Jitter sometimes makes false teeth from forward pistons. But so far, we've been spared this.
Life here in Jitter might be thought monotonous by one fresh from the street. Our principal entertainment is going swimming. Although even this to newly arrived visitors seems extremely hazardous. But Mrs. Eddy, I was told there are sharks just a few feet away, so they tell me that we must do something to remain fit and get cool. But aren't people attacked every day? We don't know of any case of a swimmer being attacked around here. Anyway, after you're here for a while, you become something of an Arabic fatalist. They believe, you know, that the way each of us will die was written when we were born, and that we'll die in no other way. Whether the sharks are in on this, I wouldn't know.
During the Muslim month of Ramadan, all the little annoyances of existence here are accentuated. It's so noisy during the day with the pilgrims in the street wailing and beating drums that we work at night. My daughter finds it exciting, however.
Daddy,
are
you going to town tonight? Look at all the lanterns.
We're better off at home tonight, Carmen. Listen to those wild dogs. They're all over the town.
But they're going to see all the carriage tonight.
You can watch here at the window. Believe me, it's more exciting at a distance. Well, now what?
I'll answer.
I want to see Honorable Sir.
Come in.
You know me. I pass your window every day. I'm the one with the loud voice.
Yes, I remember.
You want to give me something?
For what?
Ramadan costs money. You, my friend, you pay me.
Well, this beats everything. You wail the night and day away so none of us can get any rest, and then you expect us to pay you for it.
It is custom in Jitter.
All right, you wait. Here you are, my friend.
Thank you, Honorable Sir. I go away now.
Thank you.
But I come back next year.
No?
No.
From Chile to Nigeria to Greenland to China to Accra to the Persian Gulf and all over the world are scattered the obscure posts of the State Department's strategic and important foreign service. The job, great or small, is somehow done. Passports are issued, visas investigated, and the rights of American citizens respected and ensured. And behind all this important service are these men and women, making a life wherever they find it, and somehow calling it home.
You've been listening to Tales of the Foreign Service, a feature of the NBC University of the Air, written and produced in cooperation with the State Department and based upon confidential State Department files.